If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Listening to Wah-Paw, originally recorded by John Hartford, but on this occasion covered by the Hi-Hawks for the Hartford tribute album released just a few months ago. In fact, that's when I first heard about the High Hawks, an all-star Americana outfit consisting of players from mostly the jam grass scene. It was Chad Staley of Hardworking Americans and Great American Taxi that originally filled me in on the new band. In case you're wondering, the band includes Vince Herman of Leftover Salmon, Tim Carbone of Railroad Earth, Chad Staley, who we mentioned earlier of Hardworking Americans, Adam Gruhl of Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, Brian Adams of the Dead Fish Orchestra, and Will Trask of Great American Taxi. Together, the band blends the sounds each member is known for and offer up a fresh take with original tunes and one cover on their debut release due out June 11th on Lo-Hi Records. I caught up with Tim Carbone and Chad Staley to talk about the release and the band. The conversation started when I mentioned to the guys that our studio is about 5 miles away from where Ronnie Hawkins and the Hawks used to play. That band became The Band, who sort of invented the Americana sound. I suggested there were some similarities in at least the sound between the band the Hawks became and the High Hawks, which amused Tim Carbone.
I'll take that as a high compliment.
Perfect. The truth is, you formed this band. Well, tell me a bit about how you formed this band, Chad. Like, how did that all go down?
Boy, you know, I think we had all been threatening each other to do this for quite a few years, Ira. You know, ever since Tim and Vince and myself all met, which was, I believe, at Del Fest, I want to say, the first ever Del Fest, we just had a really good time hanging out, and we were all, you know, Vince and I were fans of Railroad Earth, et cetera. We were in the early days of Great American Taxi. And, you know, a couple more backstage hangs at music festivals over the next year or two after that first Del Fest. And the friendship formed even further. Tim started sitting in with us with Taxi whenever we could grab him when we were at the same festival. And then that led to asking Tim to produce our album at the time that we were getting ready to make, which he graciously agreed to do. And then, you know, yeah, so Vince and some of us were already friends and playing together in Taxi. Adam Gruhl from Horseshoes and Hand Grenades came along onto the scene a bit later, but immediately just kind of fell into, you know, the same hang and the same group of friends. And you know, I don't know if I've ever said this directly to Adam or Vince, but I kind of feel like Adam's a bit of a next generation of Vince. You know, Adam really has this innate ability to bring people together, to create that sense of we're in this together, we're having a good time here, let's be here now and enjoy these moments we have to make music together. Because, you know, I think any of the projects we've all been involved with through the years, it's all about that audience and band interaction. So it's we're stacked in that sense that we've got two amazing frontmen in Adam and Vince. And yeah, we're just all friends, been threatening to do it. And finally a moment, a wrinkle in time in 2019 appeared where we all had a break in our calendars and we went for it and signed up for some shows. And that really led us to where we are now.
Tim, did you want to add anything to that?
Oh yeah. I mean, Adam's kind of like, you know, Vince's mini me a little bit. But the thing about Adam is that he has this this wide-eyed joy and wonder of the world, kind of like almost at all times. I mean, he always like looks at something and like he was like, "That's amazing!" You know, like no matter what it is, it's like, "Look, there's a stone on the road. It's amazing!" You know, you know, and I mean that in all goodwill, you know. So it's a joy to the two of them together, or, you know, it's just a perfect combination. You know, I don't know that there's a, this is not like a super group thing. This is like a bunch of really good friends getting together and making actually really good music. It just kind of worked out that everything, all of the songs that we collectively brought to the table fit together like a little puzzle, which kind of brings me to, we actually have a puzzle.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really kind of, you know, and as far as like, I knew Vince from, you know, I met Vince the very first time we played, Railroad Earth played Telluride in 2001, because Leftover Salmon was like headlining one of the late night stages that were last band on, you know, and that usually like goes to like, you know, midnight or something, you know. And I met him, I don't know where the hell he came, I think he came into what we did a late night at that little teeny club there. What's that little club there? That
Sheridan Opera House.
Too. No, there's a little one, the downstairs.
Oh,
one.
Fly Me to the Moon Saloon.
Fly Me to the Moon Saloon, yeah.
Yep.
And he wound up, I on a, just before we played, he was out, I saw him at the bar, and I was like, yeah, I introduced myself. And then that was like the first time I met him, and, you know, we've kind of been crossing paths here and there. And then he did a solo. He went out an open for us as a solo. God, when the hell was that? 2004,
probably, Tim. 2004, probably.
Yeah, like real.
It was super, right before really Taxi.
Yeah, it was before Taxi. Yeah, and then when they asked me to do the record, I was like, you know, I think you guys, Taxi, were, I'm not aware of exactly how much, you know, of that I actually did or had done, you know. It was a huge, it's always been a huge part of my life. I've been making records since, and producing records since 1986. So, and that was great. I loved doing that record. And then I did another record with them after Vince went back, when Leftover Salmon kind of went more into a full-time thing again. And yeah. It's great. This band is the most fun I've had in, like, honestly, in being in a band and making a record and doing shows. It's the most fun I've had for like 40 years, man, 35 years. I mean, it's just like, this is the way it should be.
With a collective total of over 150 years in the business, and that's all of you, not one of you individually.
Yeah, I'm almost 150. But,
yeah. Right. Well, yeah, Vince isn't here to defend himself, but I was going to suggest, I don't know how you share the rest of the 50 years between all the rest of y'all, but with 150 years in the business and all the experience that you have, Tim, that Vince has, is it hard to sort of check the ego at the door when you come into a room with songs and want to prepare songs with this new band, this new entity?
Not really. I mean, there's always going to be a little bit of push me, pull me, because, you know, we're artists. And then ultimately, you don't do this. Anybody that's going to sit here and say that there isn't at least a certain element of ego involved is a fucking liar, period. End of story. Yeah. So, you know, you have to have a little bit of that in order to go out and do it, you know, and so there's always going to be a little, but in this band, I never really felt it at all. I mean, as far as, it was always like always felt open, to add songs, to add thoughts to the songs, to, you know, Chad and I and Todd Dival produced it. And that was essentially three guys that had done a lot of this before, getting together and being like a three-headed monster to make the best of what we had, you know. And what we had was fucking gold.
Well, let's talk a bit about the gold, because I think it blends as much as the bands that you're currently in as your musical influences. It's a lot more rich than obviously just a bluegrass or jamgrass record. In fact, it hardly is a jamgrass or bluegrass record. This is an Americana record, as I referred to earlier, with everybody taking part in what's going on. How did the sound of the band evolve, Chad? Maybe you can talk to a bit about how the sound of this band evolved.
Yeah, sure, Ira. I mean, I think, you know, the beautiful thing about how this all happened, you know, like I said, we booked some shows, right? We booked we booked four shows in Colorado, and then we had another four shows or five shows in the upper Midwest. And we, you know, I knew Adam was writing some songs with this project specifically in mind. Tim has had some songs that he really hadn't found the right place for and was also actively writing. I hadn't written any music since the last Taxi record that Tim produced, which was in 2015, I think. I just found myself slightly uninspired, slightly a little bit listless, maybe. I mean, in Hardworking Americans, I was just the keyboard player. I mean, I had some creative input maybe into the first record when we did the cover songs and selected the songs we decided to record, but really largely served as the keyboard player in that band. But as the dates for this approached, I really got inspired and found a groove in spending some late evenings after my family went to bed with a chance to write and kind of write with this in mind, knowing what, you know, individually everyone that was going to be a part of this could do or does for, you know, in their own way. So we were Vince was writing too. And at one point we had talked about maybe we should be like a politically motivated band. And Vince really latched onto that. And Vince has always kind of had that of, you know, really wanting to stand up and fight for what he believes is right, you know? And I think largely we are all on the same page with that. And Vince kind of went down that road in his writing. But when we all got together at Vince's house up Four Mile Canyon, just west of Boulder, we just showed up with these songs. Each, you know, Tim had four or five songs. I had three, four songs. Adam had like five or six songs. Vince had four songs. And we had some, you know, kind of maybe had picked out a few choice cover songs, et cetera. But we just kind of like got to it in Vince's living room, literally, and started playing, and this sound unfolded, you know. And sure, it's nothing groundbreaking, but it's rooted in a lot of traditions and a lot of influences that I think we all collectively share, you know, as far back as Woody Guthrie, maybe, you know, and then Ronnie Hawkins and the Hawks and the Band and the Grateful Dead and the Eagles. Well, maybe we won't say the Eagles. That might make some of the guys upset. But you know, that country rock, Americana rock, roots rock, what used to be called rock and roll, Chuck Berry rock and roll. You know, that's kind of what I think makes most of us tick. And we have these new songs that lyrically and musically started to unfold and really fit together. And after like the first day of rehearsals, it was, I think we were all like, wow, there's something happening here, cosmically speaking. And I think right then and there, we knew we had to make a record at some point because of how amazing the material fit together.
Yeah, it just happened right away. There wasn't any like, hey, what if you do this? What if you did that? You know, it was just like, oh, you know, it just unfolded. And it was like, well, that's a band right there, buddy.
did this event happen after the eight shows that you played, or was prior to the shows that you played? Sorry, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, the first shows were booked in Colorado, and Vince was living in Colorado at the time. So we had all flown out there a few days before the first four shows, Ira. We got together, started playing. And again, really, there was, outside of us all knowing that, you know, we all had been doing some writing kind of with this project in mind, you know, I think too, we thought, well, maybe we'll just lean on some collective material and some common covers we know together, et cetera, you know, and kind of have a freewheeling jam, but getting a group of friends together and doing that and knowing, you know, that we all have fan bases to draw from and we could get together and play some shows because we were friends and wanted to do that. And then as we started to introduce these songs, it really became evident that there was something really unique and special happening. And in the process of that too, Vince and Adam were kind of figuring out Telecaster and electric guitar because they're primarily, you know, flat top pickers. And so they were figuring that out. But as they did that, it was really cool because I feel like that was kind of part of this unique spin we put on this Americana music was this adaptation that these guys were developing onto electric instruments too. And Tim's playing a bit of electric guitar in this band too. So, you know, and that's cool too. There's a creative outlet in that sense too, you know, instead of doing what we all do in our regular day jobs. So.
Right. How did the Wawpaw cover come together for the John Hartford tribute? Because obviously, Chad, you produced that record, so you had some inside knowledge on how that was going. But did that come out of these sessions as well? Because the energy, that's immediate. I know you told me about this project, but the energy from that song on that record was so exciting that I had to hear more High Hawks. Was that part of these sessions as well?
Yeah, it actually was. And that was a really great night. I think it was January of 2020. So a little over a year ago, we'd gotten into our friend Todd Dival's studio, Silo Sound, to make this record, knowing that we also had to cut a song for the Hartford tribute album. And I think we were the last band to actually cut a track for that. And I think it was after the first day in the studio, we started discussing over beers and shots of tequila, et cetera, what we were going to do the next day, because we knew we had to cut this Hartford song. And that same evening also, Tim introduced his song, Just Another Stone, to us as well, which, I mean, we were like, I think half of us were in tears as he sang that song to us the first time. The rest of us had goosebumps as high as we could on our arms with the hair standing up. It was like such a beautiful song. We're like, dude, that song has to be on the record. And then I think after a few more beverages, it turned out there was a piano at this VRBO or Airbnb house we were all staying in and renting. And I started playing this kind of like Booker T groove. And then Vince started spitting the Wawpaw to that. And it all of a sudden just kind of was like, this, we got to do this. This is cool and it's unique. And then the next day in the studio, that arrangement just, you know, I think Tim suggested, hey, let's do a Hambone thing on our laps. And like he and Will Trask, our drummer, and Brian, our bass player, started to do that. And we made a loop out of that. And then I played that piano groove over that, you know, Hambone loop. And it's actually all that is loops that we created and then built the track from there. It was really fun. I'm not sure any of us had ever built a track like that before. So it's really unique how it came together.
Yeah, totally. And I didn't play, there's no fiddle on that. I just did a, you know, Keith Richards tuning and just, you know, oh, I guess it fits. It sounds good.
Yeah. Tim, what about this record is so special? Because you put it on and you really do, you know, Just Another Stone was mentioned. There are other songs. Heroes and Highways certainly speaks to that political activism, I think a little bit. There are so many great songs on this record. How did you decide on how each one was going to sound? Was it collective, or was it each songwriter kind of knew what they wanted to do with each of the songs?
I believe that we pretty much followed the lead of the songwriter for every song. And the thing about it is that everybody has a little bit of personality that I'm probably the more of all of the songwriters, I'm probably more of a chameleon than the rest of the guys. I mean, you can pretty much hear, you know, Vince is going to not that I'm going to put him in a, you know, pigeonhole him or anything, but he has a distinctive style of songwriting. Adam definitely has a distinctive style. And Chad, I can hear a Chad song right away. I mean, Chad doesn't even have to open up his mouth. It's just the way the song follows itself that you can go, oh yeah, that's a Chad Stathis song. And all of the above is a great thing. The tune that is probably closest to being a political song that I put on the record is a song that I wrote many fucking years ago. I mean, I wrote this song when Reagan was president.
Wow.
And that's the truth. And it just never found a place, you know. It's the only song I ever wrote, but it all came into my head. I was driving a car at like 90 miles an hour across the United States. I was delivering a vintage BMW 2002 to the East Coast from Oregon.
And we, my wife and I, would drive, and I had the wheel, and we went by this, we were in Minnesota, went by this sign that said Blue Earth, the name of a town. And I was like, that's a fucking cool name for a town. And then the next thing you know, I just recited all the words to my wife. And then I had her put chords alongside where I thought they should move. I just thought of the, everything, you know, the whole thing came, and I started singing it to myself. And the it was a, they had a cassette player in the car, and the only cassette that I had in the car was a UB40 cassette. So it wound up being a reggae kind of tune, because I right. couldn't think of anything else, because I've been listening to that same fucking tape for a week. So anyway, that's how that happened. But it was, all that stuff in the song was what was going on. I mean, there were refugees going on. The farmers were, you know, actually Farm Aid, I think, had only just started to happen with Willie Nelson and Neil Young. And, you know, so all of that stuff, it was, and unfortunately, all of that shit is completely still relevant.
Yeah.
You know, the world still sucks. You know, I thought we'd get out of suckage by now, but no, it just sucks even more. Who knew?
Well, it sucks less because we have great music. So I'll say that.
Yes. You know, too, I would just add that when Great American Taxi started playing with Tim too, and he started sitting in, and actually we invited him, got him to come out and play some shows, some little tours here and there with us. We, Vince and I, really latched onto that song. I think we asked Tim, you know, hey man, you want to sing a song or two? And that was one he threw out there. And I fell in love with that song right away. And I know Vince did too. And I think Vince has had you sing that song with Leftover Salmon as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was more than time for that to be recorded. And I'd also, I think, add to what Tim was saying about where some of these songs came from was, I think a lot of us were experiencing a lot of loss at the time too. There, you know, we were losing people from our community left and right.
Yeah, totally.
You know, Neil Casal, there's a song on the record called When the Dust Settles Down that I feel Neil wrote. You know, I say that very sheepishly because I hate making assumptions, but I truly feel that in my soul that it was like a day after he passed, that thing just poured out. You know, we lost Jeff Austin. We lost some other mentors. We lost some pillars, you know, of generations before us. There was a lot of loss going on. I think that emotion really comes through on this record too, you know, and in loss, we find comfort in music. And I think that was, it was therapy for all of us too, to be in this band and get a chance to make these songs together and perform them and record them. So it was a real blessing in that way to have that outlet and this conduit.
It was borderline astounding because how many songs we did, Chad? 14?
13, Baker's 13. Dozen.
Baker's Dozen in like 5 days. And I'm not talking about like, just let's get the roughs down and let's go. No, it was top to bottom. Every background vocals, lead guitar parts, blah, 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 all that crap. Just boom, came out in 5 days. You know.
Yeah, we worked hard. And I think too, to that question you asked Tim, Ira, like, I think we let everyone's person, you know, yeah, sure, the songwriters had some idea for the way the song should be, but really it's not like, oh, you should play this and you should play that. Maybe a tiny bit of that, but really mostly like, be yourself in this song, serve the song. And all these people in this band know how to serve a song and play a song and let the story tell itself and let the song unfold and support that. And that's what's really cool about this band too. There's a lot of respect and space for that to happen.
That's, you know, of course, I ham-handedly answered the question, but that's kind of basically what I was saying. I'm saying we followed the song. Because
sure.
The song is coming out of the brain and mind of the songwriter. But everyone followed the song, and I don't think anyone forced anything on. I mean, everyone would just follow their own instincts. And I'm telling you what, I mean, not for nothing, but like I'm working on my 73rd album in my career, and very few of them I'll go back and listen to them again, because I feel like they're gone. I just sent them off and they're, you know, it's like they're my little soldiers. I sent them off to go fight the battles, and you know, I'm making another army over here, you know. And but this record, I'll turn it, I'll put it on all the time. I mean, it's just, it, I know this record is going to stand the test of time because I'm not just saying that to be, you know, puff anybody up. I just, that's just the way I feel, you know.
Chad, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the band that is pictured on over your left shoulder right now. So Jerry and everybody else. And I say that because it's appropriate because Do-Si-Do kind of has that feel of folks gathering and hanging out and sort of doing what Deadheads do, right? I mean,
yeah.
So I think all of you, and I don't know all of you really well, but I know all of you have some sort of, have been influenced by the Grateful Dead a little bit in your careers and in the music that you listen to and make. So Chad, talk to me a bit about Do-Si-Do.
Yeah, you know that, I'm glad you picked up on that, Ira. It's like, I've been trying to capture the essence of a period of time in my life for a long time in a song. I think this song finally captured that, which is in high school, in the town I grew up in Green Bay, there was the only topographical feature was a place called Scraze Hill. And up on top of that, this kind of ridge, large prairie mound, whatever, you know, we're right on the Lake Michigan there. There was a lot of farms up there, and there was this old dirt road called Sunnyview Road. And actually in high school, I had a band called Sunnyview Road after this particular road too. And it was like it was a hippie band of sorts that we were trying to do in high school. But a whole group of us Deadhead high school guys that all hung out, you know, like when we'd have spring break in high school, we'd go find where the Grateful Dead was playing and go try to get into the show. A lot of times just ended up hanging out in the parking lot, but we were dedicated from like age 13 on to this for whatever crazy reason. This little Catholic high school had tons of Deadheads in it, but every Saturday night at 9 p.m., the classic rock station in the Fox Valley there called WAPL would broadcast In a Gotta Da Vida, the full 18 plus minute version of that song, right? And this became a thing for us to do on Saturday nights. We would go drive up to Sunnyview Road. We'd all park our cars. We'd all tune in our stereos to In a Gotta Da Vida. We'd have some beers. We'd bust out a J, whatever. And that would kick off our Saturday night. And then after that, and we'd all be dancing in this gravel road in the farmer's field, whatever. And then after In a Gotta Da Vida would play over that 20 minutes, then we'd crank up our favorite Dead tapes, you know, and whoever would get a turn with their car, we'd stay up there till midnight, one in the morning and have us a time. And so I really wanted to capture the essence of that and speak to that. And just like, I feel like there's just this whole scene that has carried on, you know, like a lot of people, a lot of Deadheads were kind of listless after Garcia passed, but then like I found bluegrass festivals and, you know, really got into Grisman and a lot of that stuff after Garcia passed. And like that world that opened up and the jam world that kind of exploded after Garcia's death was, talk about a silver, you know, every touch of gray has its silver lining, you know, it's like, what happened from that is amazing. And kind of just wanted to speak to that, you know, and try to celebrate that and help carry that forward.
One of the covers that did make the record is Fly High. And if I'm not mistaken, it was part of a Woody Guthrie collaboration that Jay Farrar did, right? Formerly of Sunvolt. And you heard this song, Tim, talk about first hearing the song and why you thought it was important to put it on this record.
Well, the first time I heard the song, I kind of knew that was coming down. It was kind of interesting because Jay Farrar was also part of this soundtrack for I forget the Kerouac story, but he did the soundtrack for this movie, this little indie movie. And so
on the road.
No, it wasn't on the road. It was
Big Sur. Big Sur.
Yeah, Big Sur. It was Big Sur.
Yeah.
And I just love the music on that. I mean, I loved his songs in particular. The other guy, you know, is all right, but I heard he was going to do this collaboration with Jimmy James, and I think he came on a little late, but the other guy whose name is now, of course, stupid, you know, I can't remember shit anymore.
Anders Parker, is that right?
Anders Parker. And so I heard that song, and I just, I first of all, it nearly brought me to tears because it was just so perfectly, the lyrics were so, I mean, I think they're perfectly formulated, the way they're written, it tells the story really great. And I thought it was really, two things I thought were like really remarkable. Like first, like, I thought it was really weird that Jay Farrar would do this, a Woody Guthrie thing, when, you know, Tweedy had already done one with Billy Bragg. And I just like, that seems a little weird. But, and then I also thought it was like, I thought it was really unique that Woody Guthrie would write a song. And I think that the song, that those lyrics were written sometime in the late 40s or early 50s. It just seemed like so unique that he would write something from the perspective of flying home in an airplane that early. I don't think anybody else had written a song. I mean, I guess like Flying to Rio, which came out in the 30s, but that was, other than the title of that song, there's no real reference to being in an airplane. I mean, he's talking about looking down past his wing and seeing stuff in the clouds and in the houses below. I've done all that stuff, you know? I mean, when I was a kid, we used to go visit my aunts and uncles in Brooklyn. I was lived out in Long Island, and we'd get on the Cross Bronx Expressway, which is like 80% of it is an elevated highway. So you're always driving along looking, and I'd be looking out and looking in like in the windows of apartments and just thinking to myself, like, what's going on in there? Like, what are those people, like that every one of those windows is an apartment, and there's like a group of people, and there must be like 500 to 1,000 people, I mean, in this one building. And like, I'm a kid, I'm like 8 years old, and I'm thinking these weird thoughts, you know, because I'm just a nut job, I guess. I just identified with that whole thing, and then I just fell in love with the song, and I immediately wanted to learn how to play it and sing it. And that was just one of the ones I dragged into the band. I was like, yeah, I can do this. And those guys liked it, so.
Loved it. Such a beautiful song.
Yeah.
That's the only cover on the album too, Ira. That's the only one.
We could talk about the whole record, and I'm sure it'll come up in conversation again. What's going to happen with this record? Because are you going to be able to tour it a little bit? Is the plan to do some local gigs around the record in Colorado, at least? Like, how are, aside from listening to the record when it comes out, how are people going to hear these songs live?
Yeah, well, already there's, in early June, we're playing some upper Midwest dates, you know, and Adam and I both currently live in Wisconsin, so we've kind of got a foothold up here in terms of ground logistics, et cetera, and it's always been a strong territory for Leftover Salmon, for Railroad Earth, for Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, for Hardworking Americans, for Great American Taxi. You know, it's just one of those geographical regions that we've all really had a lot of success in. So some things came together in early June where everybody was open, and, you know, none of us have really fully gotten back to other touring, et cetera. So that's going to happen. We just added a date in Vail for Budweiser's Hot Summer Nights on June 22nd. Those shows in the Midwest are the first weekend of June. We're definitely going to do a full Colorado tour. I mean, we got to get this band on the West Coast. We've got to get this band up in the Northeast. I mean, we're getting calls for the Southeast. There's a lot of interest in the band. We've just got to figure it out now with everyone's calendars. But without stressing on it or making it a stress on anyone, and really just trusting, throwing caution to the wind, trusting the universe, which is kind of what we've done the whole way with this project. I think, you know, the universe will open doors for us to get together and be out there playing. And, you know, I think there's going to be opportunities where most of the bands are on festivals together, and hey, bonus, you get the High Hawks too, you know? So, yeah, I think some providence will help take care of us here along the way. There will be shows for sure.
Tim, does this take away from regular touring for Railroad Earth? Not that we know what regular touring looks like right now, but Well, is the plan to do both pretty consistently and as much as you can do?
The way that works for me with any other thing that I want to do outside of Railroad Earth is I'm kind of a slave to Railroad Earth's schedule. So as soon as because I do a lot of things, I produce a pandemic has kind of put a little kibosh on all this shit, but
right.
Normally I'm producing 3 to 5 records a year, and that takes, takes hundreds of hours essentially. So we have kind of a thumbnail sketch of a rule that basically if Railroad Earth is not booked within 60 days out, people get to do their thing, I kind of follow that rule, and then basically, I have a lot of things I like to do. And right now with the thing that's highest on my agenda is the High Hawks. And so, I mean, our management has not seen the wisdom of doing a lot of shows during the pandemic. So we're not doing, of course our lead singer is out there playing every fucking day, but that's neither here nor there.
Right. Right.
But as a band, there's too many of us. We can't get in a bus. I mean, it's just like, it's impossible to fly everybody. And then what are you going to do? You're going to rent a van? I mean, up until now that everyone's vaccinated, it's a little bit different, but up before that, it was basically, nobody wanted to get in a 12 passenger van, even to drive an hour and a half from the airport to get to a festival. And next thing what are you going to get? Everybody going to rent a car, and then all of the costs go through the roof. And then none of the logistics really kind of work out all that great. It's much better to do. Somehow the High Hawks, we've been able to get it to, the shows that we've done, like when we did some of the shows we did in the summer of 2020, I drove to, which was actually pretty fucking cool. It was really, I hadn't done a lot of solo driving across the country, and it was cool, but it's just, Rare Earth is never really, it's just logistically whack to try and get essentially 12 people. There's 7 people in the band and 5 people in the crew. So you got to get 12 people somewhere. It's just very difficult. So that's left openings for the High Hawks, like during the summer. I'm waiting to see how many more openings there will be, but it makes it a little easier. We don't know exactly what's going to go on in the future, and there's no way to really know. Nobody knows,
Yeah, and I guess it's the same for Vince and Adam, right? I mean, Vince has been playing. They've been playing some shows, I think a few like little tiny shows. Salmon has, yeah. But so I guess it's the same for them, right? So is Adam, right? So I guess that's the thing, is that this project exists sort of perpendicular to, or beside, every parallel to whatever else is going
parallel.
On.
Parallel, yeah.
Parallel to everybody else's life, right?
Yeah. I've got a lot of experience in this, coming from hardworking Americans land too, where you had Widespread Panic schedule, Todd Snyder schedule, Great American Taxi schedule, stuff Dwayne Trucks was involved with. So, it takes patience and trust, but those windows do open, and then you gotta jump on them and pounce and make things happen in very compact amounts of time, but it's doable.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Before I let either of you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about Tim first, about Railroad Earth. Is there a new record coming? Are there plans for new music?
Anytime? We have a new record in the can. It's been in the can. We finished a record in the final mixes were done and mastering were done in January of 2020, and then everything, the world exploded, and our management has decided that it doesn't make any sense to release a record until we can actually tour in a significant way to support it, whatever. I would have done something, maybe pulled a few and
made some videos and released, you know, but, you know, I'm just one, I'm one breeze in the gale force. this is me.
Well, hardly. I don't think fans would agree with that, but I understand where you're coming from. And Chad, what's is there a hardworking Americans record? Are we going to see another record? I mean, I know that obviously Neil's not around, but Neil was kind of heading out of that band anyway. He wasn't on the second record, if I remember correctly. So
no, actually he was, Ira, but
touring. Yeah, maybe he didn't tour with you guys.
No, he toured most of that, the Rest in Chaos album, and then there was a live album after that too that we toured. But and then he jumped out of the bus because it was just getting, he knew his schedule, we were getting sabotaged by a party I won't mention, but Neil knew it was dragging the band down, and we collectively decided that if HWA was going to continue on, it would probably have to be without Neil. And then Daniel Sproul from Rose Hill Drive took over guitar duties. And there was actually a full record made out at the Cash Cabin that sits on a shelf collecting dust somewhere. And I don't know if it'll ever see the light of day. There's creative differences, so to speak. So I'm not anticipating anything there, at least nothing super happening super close to now. A single was just released though from those Cash Cabin sessions for that Johnny, the words of Johnny Cash that his son John Carter Cash had curated with a bunch of like big Nashville artists, really, like the Brad Paisleys of the world and Casey Musgraves, etc. But we wrote music to two Johnny Cash lyrics, which was, you know, some put that on the bingo card is something I never thought I'd be doing. And there's a song called Big Hearted Girl and another song called Boy Something Wine. Both came out really cool. Big Hearted Girl just recently was released as part of this collection of Johnny Cash lyrics that other artists put songs, music to. But I've had a blessing of the historical and hysterical Pachyderm Studios being just up the road from me, south of the Twin Cities. Nirvana in Utero was made there. I think a couple Alice in Chains records were maybe made there, some of that Minneapolis scene stuff. It's an amazingly cool studio. And I was introduced to it from Adam. I produced their Horseshoes and Hand Grenades album, Miles in Blue, there. I've been working there a ton producing albums and recently was in there working on an album for a regional artist here around the Driftless area named Greg Hall. And then just finishing up an album for a guy named Matt Poudis, who's the front man from the Minneapolis band White Iron Band. And those will probably come out later this year, early next year. So keeping busy with some of that. And you know, I help run, Tim does too. We both run Lo-Hi Records together along with our partner, Jim Brooks. And that keeps us busy. And I'm an owner and founder of a distillery here in La Crosse. That's kind of what brought me to La Crosse, Wisconsin and back to the homeland. So there's a lot going on.
Cool. Well, I won't keep you any longer then. Thanks so much for taking the time. Chad, we talked a bit, you teased me about this High Hawks record last time we chatted, and I was so psyched to hear it and get to talk to both of you about it. And I can't thank you enough for the record and for everything to date. So thanks for taking the time, guys. Really appreciate it.
It's great to talk to you, Ira. Thanks for the conversation. Love hanging with you. Hope to see you soon at a show.
Tim Carbone and Chad Staley of the High Hawks. For more information, including tour dates and album pre-orders, visit the band's Facebook page. Before we leave you, let's listen to a track off of the High Hawks' self-titled debut. Here is Heroes and Highways.
Right.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.